I'm going to give the microphone over to our secretary, Gabe Griffith. We are officially calling the business meeting for Sunday morning to order. And Gabe?
Okay, here we go. Can everybody hear? Okay, this mic seems to be touchy, so if I get away from it, please just holler out. These are the business meeting minutes of the California Council of the Blind for fall 2012. Friday, November 2nd, credentials report. Pam Pology gave the credentials report. There were 8 chapters not seated. These chapters were Antelope Valley, Butte County, Greater San Joaquin, High Desert, Humboldt, Inland Empire, San Mateo, and Solano Adult Blind Club. Motion. It was moved and seconded to accept the credentials committee report. The motion passed. Passed unanimously. Elections. President Donna Pomerantz. President Donna Pomerantz was the nominations committee choice. She was elected by acclamation. First Vice President Jean Lozano was the nominations committee choice. He was elected by acclamation. Treasurer Peter Pardini was the nominations committee choice. He was elected by acclamation. Board positions. Vince Calderon was the first nominations committee choice for the first seat. He was elected by acclamation. Lena Dawes was the nominations committee choice. She was elected by acclamation. David Hanlon was the nominations committee choice. Charles Navarrete was nominated from the floor. David Hanlon won on a roll call vote. David Jackson was the nominations committee choice. Charles Navarrete was again nominated from the floor. David Jackson was elected by a roll call vote. Saturday, November 3rd, Constitution and Bylaws Report. Gabe Griffith gave the second reading of the one convention a year proposed amendment. There were several arguments for the passing of the amendment and several questions asked. Some of the figures of how much CCB loses on each convention were given. Some of these include meal subsidies and not meeting meal and beverage guarantees to the hotel. Other expenses are staff time, gas and insurance, and board travel. There were also questions regarding elections. It was asked if there would be 2 consecutive elections in one region. It was pointed out that locations did not significantly affect outcome of elections. When would the convention be? There are some reasons for both spring and fall. Spring reasons would include Capitol Day. Positives for fall would be elections. Motion. Mitch Pomerantz moved a due pass of the proposed amendment. It was seconded by several. After much discussion, the motion passed on a voice vote. Muttstrut, 2012. Peter Pardini gave the Muttstrut financial report. He covered all 3 regions, their projected incomes and expenses, and actual for both. The 3 regions were Los Angeles, Sacramento, and San Francisco. Overall income for the Muttstrut as of October 28, 2012 was $18,215. Total profits were $11,263. Sunday, November 4th, business meeting minutes. Gabe Griffith read the spring 2012 business meeting minutes. Motion. It was moved and seconded to approve the minutes with slight modifications. The motion passed unanimously. Treasurer's report. Peter Bardini gave the treasurer's report as of September 30th, 2012. Total liabilities and equity was $1,082,615 from January 1 through September 30, 2012. The total net income was $78,996. Peter said that we will probably have a net loss for 2012. Motion. It was moved and seconded to approve the treasurer's report. The motion passed. Audit. Peter covered some of the numbers and adjustments that resulted from the last audit. Motion. It was moved and seconded to approve the audit report. The motion passed. Constitution and bylaws. Gabe Griffith thanked everyone for a good discussion on Saturday and mentioned that the committee will be busy preparing a report for enacting the one convention amendment that was passed earlier in the meeting. Motion, it was moved and seconded to approve the Constitution and Bylaws Committee report. The motion passed. Resolutions. Jeff Tom gave the resolutions report, including reading the resolutions. Following is a listing of the resolution titles and the result of their vote. Resolution 2012B1, guide dog licensing for out-of-state schools, and it passed. Resolution 2012B2, and Sullivan Macy Act legislation, and it passed. Resolution 2012B3, roundabout pedestrian street crossings, passed. Resolution 2012B4, federal yellow pedestrian crossing markers, and it passed. Resolution 2012B5, inaccessible self-service kiosks, it passed. Resolution 2012B6, structured negotiations, and it was withdrawn. Resolution 2012B7, volunteer appreciation, passed. Resolution 2012B8, hotel staff appreciation, passed. Motion. It was moved and seconded to accept the Resolutions Committee report. The motion passed. Committee reports. Artis Bazin asked each chapter to make sure there are two representatives from each chapter on the membership email list. Robert Wendt said that the scholarship committee is trying to develop new guidelines for scholarship applications. Artis asked if it would be possible to put a thank you message to specific donors on the scholarship page of the CCB website. Pam Pology thanked Steve Fort for serving on the on the Credentials Committee, and Ed Branch assistance with preparations. She asked delegates to please get her any changes prior to the convention. Linda Perel said she will be recruiting people for the, quote, team thank you, end quote. She said she is still learning about all the areas and tasks of the publications committee. Pam Metz talked about trying to get a self-defense seminar for the spring convention that would be sponsored by the Domestic Violence and Hate Crimes Committee. New business, there was no new business. Old business, there was no old business. Announcements. Dirk Neihardt announced a cash prize in Kathy Skiver's name. It was donated as a door prize. Charlene Ornelas announced that the San Diego Braille Club is going to be taking a trip to Laughlin, Nevada. Warren Cushman suggested continuing the conference calls about the constitutional amendment implementation. Steve Fort asked why a delegate vote wasn't taken on the constitutional amendment. The reason was that the voice vote was overwhelmingly in favor of the amendment, so the roll call vote wasn't needed. Tuan Nguyen announced that he will be taking over as president of the Blind Students and looks forward to working on behalf of blind students over the next year. Mike Keithley announced that the ALD receivers have been working well this convention. Donna thanked everyone for making this convention what it was. Hey. I don't know. That's side note. That's exactly what the recording said.
Now, I know I said more than that.
No, you said I want to thank everyone
for making this convention what it was.
That's why I put it in there. I listened to the recording 3 times to make sure.
Yes. Okay. I love it. What it was. I probably said something like, we are the CCB, right? It is us. Yes. Okay, Mr. Secretary, continue.
Hey, we can't have a business meeting minutes without a little controversy, can we?
That's right. Let's debate that. Oh, sorry.
The next convention will be from April 11th through 14th, 2013, at the Arden West Hilton Hotel in Sacramento. Motion. It was moved and seconded to adjourn the convention. The motion passed unanimously. Respectfully submitted, Gabe Griffith, CCB Secretary.
Do we have a motion to approve? Okay, we have a motion to approve and a second. Do we have any discussion? Discussion. Bernice.
Okay. It's not exactly discussion, but Gabe, you did a wonderful job of capturing the institutional memory.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bernice. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
No. We have one more hand.
Point of information, Madam President.
Kathy, go ahead.
I am. Gabe, you read very well, and you did a great job, but Dirk Neihardt did something for Kathy Skiver's. What was that?
It was I think he said from the Kathy Skiver's fan club or something is exactly
what
how he
I
said it.
Yeah. Dirk gave a door prize donation to the body assembled at the business meeting representing the Kathy Skiver's fan club, is how he put it.
When I go home, I'm going to thank him. He must think I'm very rude. I didn't even know.
We have one more.
Okay, we have Pam Pology. Okay, who is?
Donna Sanchez.
Donna Sanchez and then Pam Pology.
Maybe I was asleep, but he didn't say anything about resolutions. He did? Sorry, I guess I was asleep.
You know, Donna, you need to snore louder so we can go over there and poke you with the cane if you're sleeping. You're a sneaky sleeper. Pamology.
Madam President, I wanted to mention that, to go on record, that I, at the last convention in the fall, before we adjourned, I may mention regarding these dates, the 11th through the 14th, that meant that credentials needed to be in by February 25 to comply with the 45-day rule, and that was left out.
Yes, you did give notice of that at the business meeting as well.
Thank you.
So if we can amend, that was officially the first time that she gave notice to the body of the credentials.
Okay, I will get that added.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Mr. Treasurer, are you? No? Okay. What I wish to do is allow Jeff Tom to give his governmental affairs report. I'm going to go ahead and give you my microphone. Ed has it. Okay. So that Jeff could give his report to us. Please, everyone, join me in welcoming Jeff Tom.
Okay. Thank you. So I want to start by, I'm going to abbreviate this report. We have business to do today, but I do want to go over some things. But I really want to start by talking about Capitol Day. And Donna gave the folks who participated kudos the other night, but I want to re-echo it. And I'm going to try, if I miss anybody, please out there, those of you who are there, remind me and make me include you. But as she said, as Donna said, these folks covered about 90 legislators out of the 120. And our numbers were way down for Capitol Day, but these intrepid souls did all of us proud. So I'm going to list, let's clap at the end, but let me list them all off here, or try to. From Southern California, we had Charles Navarrete, Artis Bazin, and Pam Pology. We had from the Bay Area, we had Frank Welty and Christina Wood. We had Diane Chu, worked in the Bakersfield area, and other legislators. We, from Sacramento, we had Deborah Thompson. And from the Redwood from Eureka, we had Eric Smiley. And from the Redwood Empire chapter, we had a whole group. Lorene Cheveny, Gigi DeMarie, Bill Gillespie, and who am I missing? Did I miss one person, I think? I guess that's it. Yeah, no, I know you are, but I gave you Eureka credit. I'm not giving you two credits, Eric. or did I forget you? Okay. I think that's it. I think I got them all. So now let's hear it for all these folks, because they really worked hard. So I want to... Yes, that's right. Table two. Exactly. The Capitol Day table over there. And I want to talk first about the three legislative imperatives that we did cover. The first one is AB 455, a bill we are supporting by Mr. Medina. This bill would require that certain Braille and certain reading and math task force for readers of Braille that were adopted back in the earlier years of this century, 6 or 7 years ago, that these standards be modified and changed to align with more current standards that have been adopted, stated for all students. And, of course, we want our students to be expected to achieve the same standards that all sighted students are. So, and if this bill passes, there'll be a group of experts that I am confident we will be part of. Again, like we were back in the days when the task forces met to develop the original standards. and we so that we will be able to work on making sure our standards are equal with those for other students. AB 459 is a bill we are opposing. Many of you remember AB 727, a bill that we, along with others, successfully opposed 2 years ago. AB 459 is almost a duplicate. It basically would increase from 35% in a phased-in approach the percentages of food, and also apply to beverages in state building vending machines all the way up to 100% that must be healthy in accordance with nutritional guidelines. And since virtually every vending machine in state buildings is operated by a blind vendor under the Business Enterprise Program, this is going to result in loss of income for our vendors and for nobody else. And so we're opposing that bill, and we will hopefully, you know, hopefully maybe there'll be some dialogue this time with the folks who are supporting the bill. We'll see. Roy Harmon of our group is involved with it, and we'll work from there. Our third legislative imperative was to support additional money for disabled student services programs in community colleges. About 5 years ago, the colleges took, I've heard two figures, either a 12 to 16% hit, but for their general funds. But disabled student services took a 40% hit. And many legislators weren't even aware that they did it when it happened. So the goal now is to try and get, now that the governor has proposed a lot of new money for community colleges in his budget, but none of it would specifically expressly go to disabled student services. So the proposal, and we were working with other allies in the field, the proposal would be to give what amounts to half of the cut back and to restore the funding levels up to a level that was half of what it had been. Those are our three. I actually, and Donna doesn't even know this, but I was actually asked on behalf of our organization, and we'll have to decide whether I'm going to do it, but we were actually asked to meet with the governor on this issue with community colleges. I seldom surprised them, but this is one she didn't know. I hadn't had time, just happened up a day or two ago. So, and it's good that we are, it's because of you that we are getting that kind of recognition. You know, we really are starting to become known in the state capitol. Okay, I'm just going to go through a few more bills that we are going to be supporting and a few more items. AB 5 is a bill, and I don't happen to have the author. I was going to try and use the internet this weekend, but I didn't get to. And so, but I will get the author and put it on the, I want to do a governmental affairs report and get it out very quickly after I get back. And so I will provide the author, but it's a bill we've voted to support, on prohibiting discrimination on the basis of homelessness. And I guess it's almost prophetic or ironic or whatever you might say, but I'm sitting over there sort of coordinating the whole Capitol day on Thursday in the Capitol, and I get a call from someone who was turned away by the major women shelter in Sacramento because of her blindness. And, of course, I referred her to Kathy as well for, you know, assistance from Ellen Murphy, but we're also going to be working with it with we're going to be, I've been trying to contact them and have not yet gotten through to them, but we're going to be working on that because this is not the first instance, as Kathy can tell you and as Donna can tell you. All three of us know very well that we have these instances where blind people are turned away because of rules and whatever they have from homeless shelters and women's shelters, and this is a really sad instance where you're dealing with abused women who are turned away when they need help. And then they refer them to organizations like the Society for the Blind, which you know, there's nothing they can do. It's not that they don't want to do something, but what they don't have the resources. And so this is an issue that I think we really need to focus on, not only in Sacramento, where I obviously will focus, but all over. So hopefully this bill, and I think we probably should talk to the author to make sure that, that something is in the intent is stated or something like that. But this is a bill that could go a long way toward helping in that area, among many others. AB 133 is an interesting bill, and it's a little hard to explain, but I'm going to do my best. It is a bill that says when a publisher or the like submits a book or other type of document, principally books, to the State Board of Education or a local of education to try and get the book accepted by the state or by a school district for use, that the that they would have to provide that book also in a digital format. That's what the bill does. That's what the bill does. What our Governmental Affairs Committee has asked me to do, and what I have done, is offer amendments to the bill that says when you provide that digital format, it's got to have a digital format that's accessible to screen reading software. The committee has instructed the president and I that if we can't get these amendments accepted, we will oppose the bill. It may be a good bill, but still we have to stand on principle. If the author was, I've met with the author himself is willing to accept the amendments, but the author, of course, has sponsors, which I assume are publishers, and we don't yet know. I'm still waiting to get an answer back. You know, you can only make so many phone calls, which I have done, and I'm still waiting to get an answer back. Eventually, if we do not get these amendments accepted, we will have to oppose the bill. And we will do so strenuously because it shows, in my opinion, some bad faith on the part of the sponsor. Even if the author, you know, feels our cause is just, it doesn't do any good when the rubber meets the road if they won't accept our amendments. There's other bills. One interesting bill, which I will mention. Which this committee has decided we are not going to take a specific position on because it is so complex, but which I think is important that you know about, is Senate Bill 492 by Ed Hernandez. This bill would seek to expand the scope of practice for optometrists in certain ways to do certain other things. It is very difficult to assess, you know, on the one side you've got the arguments that, optometrists are getting more and more well-trained all the time. They're doing a lot more than they ever did before. There's not as much care around because of the shortage of primary care docs and ophthalmologists. On the other side, you have the view, well, they just don't have what it takes to do the jobs that we ophthalmologists do. I don't know I can't give you, and I think it was the view of most of our committee members, that we don't really know enough to say which of those particular tracks of thought is right. And so I encourage you, if you have an individual view on it one way or another, to certainly become involved with it. We will certainly track the bill for your own edification because it's an important issue to us. But sometimes there are issues that we do not feel we can be educated enough to take a position. So it's an ongoing issue. It might not be decided this year. If it's not, and it goes on next year, someone may decide to write a resolution on it. And in fact, that was done 15 years ago or so in a similar bill, which we opposed. But those are interesting issues. We continue to be very much involved in a long-term care services and support coalition. There are a lot of things happening in terms of expansion of Medi-Cal managed care. I'm not going to go into too much detail. Just take maybe 2 minutes on it. In June, Medi-Cal managed care is going to expand into rural counties, and then starting later this year, Medi-Cal managed care is going to be expanding for persons that are dually eligible for Medicare as well as Medi-Cal in certain pilot counties. One of the many things, and not the only thing, that we are doing is, because it was not done when managed care began for many Medi-Cal recipients, one of the things we're working on, and we have folks such as Bernice Kandarian working in this area, is we are working with the state to make sure that both current managed care recipients under Medi-Cal and future enrollees get information in accessible formats so that they can make choices, so that they can try to get their physicians into the plans if they decide to go for a plan, so that they have the same ability to make the choices that sighted Medi-Cal beneficiaries do. And, want to thank Donna for all her encouragement on this. I want to thank Bernice for her participation on the task force. Sheila Gunn Cushman is also on the task force. So we're well represented on that as well. We're also working in a number of other issues, a couple of which you'll hear today. Continue to work in areas from everywhere, from pedestrian safety to in-home supportive services to you name it. And, of course, we will work in other areas that you tell us about. You know, we look to you for guidance as to what you want to see us cover. There are other bills that I could cover today, but because we do have other things that I know we want to do, what I'd rather do, if it's okay with Donna, is open it up for a couple questions if there are specific things that you want me to address.
Do we have any questions? And I heard Bernice first.
Thank you. Jeff, the California Council of Citizens with Low Vision strongly objects to optometrists doing things like prescribing medication, doing injections, so on and so forth. And I just want to encourage you to support our view on that. We've had members in the organization who have lost vision because they are not trained to administer medications appropriately.
I sent out a couple weeks ago to three lists.
Yes, you did.
Information on this bill, and I encourage people on either side of it to write resolutions, to do what they wanted, so that this organization would have a position if it chose to do so, and nobody did that. So, you know, and we had a full discussion yesterday also in governmental affairs, so I think that for now we've done as much as we can do. If the issue has not been decided by, you know, the first year of the session, and it may not be, this is certainly an issue that is going to have a good deal of controversy, I would assume. For one thing, it's a turf war. And I'm not saying who's right or who's wrong. I'm just saying it is a turf war. So if it isn't decided and the bill is still floating around, then, you know, you're certainly encouraged, as are people on any side, yeah, to write a resolution for the fall convention and bring it up.
Yes. Okay, we have Kathy, we have Keith, and then there are two more, correct? Kathy?
15 years ago, we did oppose this bill, and that wasn't the first time. We always have. And I would like to ask that the, I don't know how it works here, that the legislative chairman and the resolutions people get together and try to find the resolution we had, because it did outline our thinking in the way of this situation for many years. It's always been a turf war. The optometrists have always wanted to do more, but I want to say one more thing. I'm glad you're going to update the legislative thing, because you said you're going to do it after this, and I wish when you put things out on the list, you remember that a lot of us have the list. Put it on the connection, please, and put it in the legislative report. Put it somewhere, but don't put it on something that some of us don't read.
And what I would say is I would definitely encourage everybody, I've been saying it over and over all weekend, to read the connection, call the connection, subscribe to the connection list, go to the website, and I'm sorry?
The last legislative report I looked at a week or two ago was an old one.
Correct, it is. It is. And what we need to remember as well is that we have Jeff, who's our governmental affairs chair, who's volunteering his time. We definitely need folks to assist in advocating with legislators. And as Jeff said, he will be putting out a new report soon after he returns. But I've heard a lot of people say, I don't go onto the computer, et cetera, et cetera. But they also don't telephone and read the connection. Okay, so I need folks to use those tools that we have out there, because we do try to put everything on the connection. Our business comes first. Anything CCB related directly from CCB gets first priority. One of the things that we do and will continue to do even better is when there is a legislative report or governmental affairs report put out on the lists and on the telephone as well, because again, there is a box for that. Jeff puts a message in the connection. Here it is, in the connection. If you don't leave with anything today, remember the connection. Thank you. Option 5, Pam says. And you will be able to get Jeff's reports on option 5. Use the connection. It's there for you. Phone, web, email lists, but it's there for you. Thank you.
Yeah, just to respond to Kathy, I not only did I expect your criticism, but I agree with it. That's one of the things. There's just some things I haven't done well enough. And Kathy, I totally agree with you that we need to have more of those reports. But there's just so many hours in the day, and some things just sort of get through the cracks. So I keep on me about it, Kathy, because I know you're right in this particular regard. Yeah, no, well, it's right.
Well, go ahead, Keith.
Okay, the we question I have that pertains to the first bill you talked about, was it the upgrading of standards for math and literary braille? The problem is that there's a lack of qualified VI teachers at this point to be able to do that. Is there going to be a kind of a solution for that down the road?
Solutions for more VI teachers?
Yeah.
That's really a bigger problem than we can handle at the state level, I think. When I've been in many, many national resolutions meeting with the new current chair of the ACB Resolutions Committee, Mark Reichert, who was a very important factor in the drafting of the Ann Sullivan Macy Act, which Mitch talked about Friday night. And this is an issue which we have talked about many, many times, and it's only getting worse. Well, it's a problem for all teachers, but it's definitely getting worse for VI teachers and for teachers in the special education field, no question about it. We need more schools, we need more programs, we need more money.
In fact, it's interesting, the agency I used to work for, LV Unified, is actually closing Francis Blaine School at the end of the school year. So there won't be any VI school in Los Angeles. And they're going to just ship all the kids off to wherever.
I actually have a quick question. Is there a second volunteer that's here that can provide you with assistance, Ed, because you're getting us water and you're running the mic? So
yeah, I have two.
Okay.
Mary Lou and another.
Great. Perfect. Perfect. Okay. Who is our next question? Because we had two more after Keith.
Jeff, this is Roger. I wanted to just mention something that troubles me, and I don't exactly know how to deal with it. First, let me just say, in the matter of not enough VI teachers, one thing that I think ACB and CCB should do is make sure that the programs for VI teachers are welcoming blind people as students. I think there have been times when that hasn't been the case. And, of course, school districts need to hire them, too. But I wanted to say, in regard with is it 133? No, I'm not sure about the one about...
133, yeah.
The one about...
the digital format.
Digital format.
Yes.
I feel uncomfortable about that in the same way that I felt uncomfortable about our bill to make them put things in regulations and formats that we can read. It seems to me, to some degree, that's the fault of the people who make computer access programs. We're kind of caving into their limitations, and I know that in order to have full accessibility, basically we need a lot of ramps, and we also need wheelchairs that can climb stairs, if you understand what I mean. We have to do some of it, and they have to do some of it. And I know we have to push them. But I sometimes feel as though the access folks are not doing all they could to make the formats that are out there accessible.
Roger, I guess I would say that, all you need for accessibility is an accessible PDF. And nowadays, most things can be, and most things are, unless they have, graphic documents as part of it. Most things are put in PDF, and then descriptions used for them if need be. So, and that's all you need. You don't need to put them in a Word file to meet accessibility requirements. It may not be readable by every screen reader, but that's not what they need to do. They just need to make one that is, that meets accessibility requirements, and that's all they need.
Pampology?
Oh, I'm sorry. They were just telling me you saw that you recognized me. I didn't hear you. First of all, I wanted to thank Kathy because she stole part of my thunder about the connection. And I just want to encourage people, to call. Ed's a really good reader, too, you guys. I had two things. First of all, when Artis and I visited Senator, I believe it was Mitchell's office, and I think that was one of the founders of the 459 regarding the vending machines, and we got into a really heated debate with I think his name was Jay, the assistant that we spoke with, and he was asking, he essentially said he didn't believe that people would go elsewhere if they wanted junk food. And so he said that they had done studies, whoever they are, had done studies saying that maybe the first day they would be upset, but after that they would resign to the fact that they're only getting health food. Well, so he asked us for a study, if we could send him a study that we've done showing, the results of the blind vendors taking a hit when they don't have the food that people want. So I just wanted to know if that was possible. And my other comment is when I went to see Senator Ed Hernandez, on the resource that we had, the room number was not correct. So that was his old room number. So I think that the new one is 6011. I'm not sure if that number, but you might want to look into that. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. It could have been a transposition error that I made because those... Well, we got the most current office list that Ed could procure a few days ahead of time. So I can't, I don't know. I figure the error was probably mine, but... Let me go back to to Pam's question.
Okay.
Because it's a very pertinent issue, and I've heard the same thing from the advocates on that side of things. And in fact, when I had the vendors luncheon yesterday, I said, look, you folks need to do a much better job of producing data on this issue if you're going to continue to advocate for your point of view. And really, it is on them. You know, we can do it. They're the ones that are on the front lines, and they have to ultimately provide the data. They did indicate there was someone down in L.A. County which has this requirement already, who does have such data that will show a drop in income, and they are obviously going to need, to do more of that in order to keep convincing, legislators and public officials that, you know, this type of healthy food legislation is really going to be detrimental to their livelihood.
Thank you. I'd also like to share with you, related to governmental affairs, we've been advocating for years in relation to vehicle donations and the dealing with the legislative changes that occurred several years ago that have caused us to drop the amount of cash that we receive per donation, and people aren't giving as much donations because of that as well. We, through Jeff, have been providing assistance to the person who is working on that in D.C. What I want to say is that just recently we've been asked to give information with our statistics, some before the bill was passed, some the year, and our current as far as how much we receive and numbers of vehicles donated, because the Washington Council of the Blind was going to have opportunity to meet directly with a key person related to that bill. So they called me, and I touched base with Ed, and we were able to get our statistics. And they wanted to thank us because they said the information we gave them with hard and fast numbers really helped things. And so we're working on that front still as well, related to vehicle donations. And I want to also thank Jeff for being available, to Mr. Schwadron, who is in D.C., kind of advocating that position. It's affecting a lot of charities, ourselves included, and hopefully changes will happen. I also want to make a statement related to what Jeff was sharing about being known in the Capitol. I have no problem saying this, and I'm definitely going to say it here in front of all of you right now. I think that folks listen to the California Council of the Blind because as things get tougher out there, CCB remains balanced and reasonable. And I think our legislators hear that. Now, I'm not saying we're not tough when we need to be tough, because we are. We work with the system. We're honest. We have integrity. We don't play games. We just tell it like it is as our membership sees it. And I think that is very well respected in the Capitol, and I want all of you to know that as well. We continue to advocate, regardless of our resources. We need more and more of you to assist Jeff. And when you say you're going to provide assistance, we need you to help out, because, as I said previously, CCB is each and every one of us. So, Jeff, I want to thank you for your report. And okay. Second? Okay. And I understand we have some discussion. Point of inquiry, Frank Welty.
Hold on. Get you on the recording. Jeff and Donna, is there a bill number yet for a vehicle donation bill in this Congress?
As I recall, the status was, the last I remembered, and Mitch can correct me if there's more information, or maybe Don even, that this year they were following a different strategy. The strategy was basically to work behind the scenes to see if they could incorporate essentially what would have been done in the past couple bills into comprehensive tax legislation, if such legislation ever gets off the ground. They therefore decided not to introduce a bill, which I think was a real smart idea because, we in California, we got an awful lot of co-sponsors, as did many other states, but we really led the nation, as we should. But you almost had the idea going in that it was all going to be, to some degree, for naught. Because you knew it wasn't going to get off the ground and past the point of essentially the point of introduction and on through the committee structure where it needs to go. So I think they're using a much smarter approach this year, having established that so many members are on board with the general idea of enabling, more attractive vehicle donation provision. So hopefully they will... be able to integrate this into tax legislation if the leadership ever allows it to to be developed.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Unfortunately, the chair of the, I think it's House Ways and Means Committee, is a Republican congressman from Oklahoma who basically told Eric Bridges that unless there is offset, meaning more revenue to offset the loss that he expects from this proposed legislation, he has no intention of letting the bill go even to his committee. So clearly the approach that the vehicle donation folks followed the last 3 or 4 years, it ran into a stone wall because one member of Congress doesn't like the bill, or doesn't like the bill as drafted.
And I truly believe that that's why the change in strategy. Okay. Any more discussion? And if folks could stand so that Ed could...
Hi, good morning. This is Andrea Pitzenbarger from Orange County.
Yes.
Just a quick comment. My husband and I donated a vehicle to CCB in 2005. And we donated a vehicle that had actually been in an accident. But it was a very easy process. It's not a big deal. They were very generous with the tax credit. And I want to encourage you guys, if you have relatives or anybody that you think could benefit from this, they came, picked it up. We didn't have to do anything. They did all the paperwork. It was very simple and very, they made it very painless. And I really appreciate that we were able to do that. And I just encourage you to really encourage people to, because it's, you'll get more donating it than you would selling it.
Thank you. Okay. We have more discussion specific to the acceptance of the governmental affairs report, because there is a motion on the floor.
I just wanted to to comment on Andrea's thing that we. People relationships are good, too, for donating vehicles. We just, I get the plaques printed for the awards, engraved for the awards, and the people who engrave our plaques gave a van to us. Plus they give us a discount. They're very nice folks.
Relationships, yeah, absolutely, Roger. It's key. Some of our chapter members have also informed me that they've told their families and they've donated as well. So I want to thank everybody that's contributed to that. Any more discussion related to the governmental affairs report? All those in favor of accepting the report, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Mr. Before I go to the treasurer's report, because someone's going to ask, I am not having a constitution and bylaws report given today because we spent so much time on it yesterday, and everybody probably still has that very well in their memory. So Gabe is, as they say, off the hook for this time, because business will be reflected in the minutes next time on that. So, Mr. Treasurer.
Thank you very much, Donna. This is going to be a summary treasurer's report, and I'm going to pick and choose some figures that I give you guys. Again, any information, reports are available from the CCB office if you're interested. So if you are, please contact them, and we'll get them out to you in your favorite accessible format. To begin with, last year we had total income, less expenses. This also includes our non-general fund income. But last year, the net income was a positive $97,486.76. From January 1st to March 31st, 2013, we have total income in the amount of $38,783.51. Our total expenses for the same period are $42,484.60. We have non-operating fund income in the amount of $16,977.11. If you add up the general fund and non-operating fund income, less the expenses for the period from January 1st to March 31st, 2013, with a net income in the amount of $13,276.02. For the period ending March 31st, 2013, CCB has total assets in the amount of $1,093,089.27. Our liabilities are $57.41. Unrealized equity in the amount of $625,228. Unrestricted board designated in the amount of $21,834. Temporary restricted funds in the amount of $419,154.28. Our permanently restricted funds is in the amount of $128,000, and the total liabilities plus equity equals $1,093,089.27. And This concludes the treasurer's report.
Have a motion? Do we have a second? Several seconds? Any discussion? If there's any discussion, please stand. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Treasurer. Okay. We're going to go ahead and do a door prize before we get to resolutions. And I'll go ahead and draw. We have a $25 cash prize. And who's it donated from? Okay, anonymous. And we have a box of cookies from the Hawaiian Honolulu Cookie Company. And they're yummy. Nellie Emerson, are you in the room? Frank Welty, are you in the room? Yay! All right, let's do one more door prize. A can of macadamia nuts. Honey roasted macadamia nuts. And Vince Calderon, where are you? Oh, he's not here. Okay, next. Clifford Smith. Clifford Smith? Bill Easton. Next. Rosa Gomez. Nope. Bob Rennie. Okay, next. Charles Navarrete. Nope. Ah, everybody tell them. Ralph Black is not here right now. Mary Lou Ruiz, yay! Okay, all righty. We're going to go ahead and give the microphone over to our resolutions chair, Mr. Jeff Tom. And after our resolutions, we are going to conclude our business session with a bit of history from Kathy Skivers. I think that's a perfect way to conclude our session today. So with that, and we do have cash door prizes left, macadamia nuts and another box of cookies from the Hawaiian Cookie Company. So stay tuned. Jeff Tom, please give a warm round of applause for our resolution chair, Jeff Tom.
All right.
Thank
so
you.
I want to thank my committee first and foremost. Lena Dawes, Charles Navarrete, Robert Wendt, Jean Lozano, Linda Perel. Who am I missing? Who? Gabe. Oh, that's right. That's right. He left. See, he left. So I disregarded him. Oh, okay. And Gabe Griffith, of course, who helped me with all my technological problems, as well as his excellent writing skills. I want to also thank Donna Pomerantz, who was there quite a bit of the time. And I want to thank all those who submitted resolutions as well. Okay, we're going to start with number two and then go back. We have six issue-oriented ones and two, and then our two ones that we have. So we're going to start with number two, and I will read the format that we use in this one, and I won't read it again in the other ones. For those of you who have never heard these before, we have certain words that we stick in at the beginning of the first whereas clause that you will hear. Okay, this one deals with resolution 2013-A2 cycle tracks, as submitted by Eugene Lozano. Whereas, and I may have left him out too, when I come to think of it, because he is also a member, and longstanding. Whereas bicycle vehicular accidents are a serious public safety problem, and whereas one of the methods proposed by bicyclists to reduce the incidence of bicycle vehicular accidents is the use of so-called cycle tracks, And whereas a cycle track is a design by which a bicycle lane is designated between the on-street parking lane and the sidewalk, and whereas a pedestrian navigating between a vehicle and the sidewalk, and thus across the cycle track, is at risk of being struck by bicycle, by oncoming bicycles. And whereas cycle tracks have been used somewhat extensively in Europe, but also in the United States, and whereas research has been contradictory as to whether cycle tracks have reduced or have reduced bicycle vehicular accidents, but such research has indicated that cycle tracks increase bicycle pedestrian accidents. Whereas best practices for the use of cycle tracks indicate that a buffer, such as grass or trees, and methods of demarcating the beginning of the cycle track, such as bollards or texture and coloration differentiation, are vital in reducing safety hazards for both bicyclists and pedestrians. And whereas bicyclists are seeking the enactment of state legislation pursuant to Assembly Bill 1193, which would purport to grant sufficient local flexibility to allow local governments to install cycle tracks. And whereas, although the bill's proponents view the bill as requiring their installation only if meeting sufficient safety criteria, the types of best practices discussed in this resolution would not be specified by the bill. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the California Council of the Blind and Convention assembled this 14th day of April at the Hilton Arden West Hotel in the city of Sacramento, California, that this organization begin a dialogue with bicyclists and other stakeholders on the appropriate use of cycle tracks. And be it further resolved that this organization oppose any legislation that would permit the use of cycle tracks unless and until the safety concerns in this resolution are adequately addressed. And the committee recommends a due pass, and I so move.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay. The next two resolutions we're going to handle a little differently because they deal with different approaches to the same topic, that of the California State Guide Dog, California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind. They're numbers 1 and 4. What we're going to do, I'm going to read both resolutions first, and then the committee, we've decided that I'm going to give some brief factual background on what CCB's policies have been in relation to some of the topics of the resolution. Then after that, we will go back to the first resolution and read it for debate. And then after that has been dispensed with, we will deal with the second resolution. So I just wanted to lay that out for you ahead of time so you know how we're going to handle it, since it's a little bit different than the norm. Okay. Resolution 2013A1, and this is dealing with the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind, and it's submitted by Margie Donovan and Ken Metz. Whereas the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind was established in the late 1940s primarily for the purpose of preventing fraud and protecting people from being solicited for unwarranted funds for the purpose of starting up guide dog schools without doing so in good faith. Whereas numerous illegal efforts were made whereby individuals or groups received funds for starting up a guide dog school only to see these fundraisers take the money and disappear without any such dog school being established. And whereas some schools began without the consideration of any reasonable standards or best practices put in place and for the purpose of training or supplying well-trained guide dogs to persons who were blind or visually impaired. And whereas this newly created board began to set up legitimate fundraising practices, guide dog school startup procedures, and licensing standards for such schools and guide dog trainers in California. And whereas other procedures were later implemented without the general public, including guide dog handlers, which now prevent out-of-state guide dog schools from helping to maintain the best training of guide dogs for those handlers who, through informed choice, have decided to attend a reputable guide dog school outside California by working for a day or two as needed, unless the out-of-California guide dog school trainer coming to California is also licensed by the board. And whereas the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind has also implemented a statute that California guide dog schools that California guide dog schools provide the names and addresses, I'm sorry, I should say that requires California guide dog schools provide the names and addresses of all California guide dog graduates attending the three California guide dog schools for no known reason. Whereas the board requires any apprentice seeking licensure to provide videos of the apprentice instructing guide dog teams without requiring the authorized use of the student's image. Now, therefore, be it resolved, et cetera, that this organization urge the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind to inform all students receiving a guide dog in California of the fact that they may be used in videos by apprentice trainers seeking their licenses, and require that apprentices obtain the student's permission to use their image. And be it further resolved that the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind inform guide dog handlers in California as to their ability to assist said handlers in cases of access issues in such places as housing, transportation, businesses, and in all areas of accessibility covered by both state and federal legislation. And be it further resolved that prospective guide dog handlers be allowed to make an informed choice of attending an out-of-state guide dog school as their choice and receive updated guide dog skill maintenance by their school of choice without that trainer being licensed in California. And be it further resolved that the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind provide handouts to the three guide dog schools in California and other schools, should they be established in California, to give to their graduates, explaining in general the board's purpose as a consumer entity. And be it further resolved that this organization find sponsors in the legislature to sponsor such legislation to cover the above, should that be necessary. And be it further resolved that if compliance with the above is not possible, CCB will not support continuation of the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind and will seek legislation to have that board dissolved. That is the end of the first of the two guide dog board resolutions. We'll now skip to number four. And this was submitted by a group of persons, Lillian Scaife, I hope I don't miss anyone, Lillian Scaife, Angela Griffith, Don Brown, Mary Beth Randall, and I think there might have been one other person. That was four out of five anyway. I did say who was submitted. Okay. Whereas in the late 1940s, 21 guide dog schools were operating in California, and whereas, led by some of the prominent leaders and members of the California Council of the Blind, advice was given to the state legislature, which resulted in the passage of legislation to create the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind, the only licensing agency of its kind in the nation, and whereas, due to the formation of the board, the number of guide dog schools qualified to obtain guide dogs in California, Whereas, due to the formation of the board, the number of guide dog schools qualified to train guide dogs in California was reduced to three. And whereas, since 1949, the board has had the exclusive authority in California to issue licenses for the operation of guide dog schools and the licensing of instructors for the training of guide dogs and guide dog handlers. And whereas the board has the above authority pursuant to Business and Professions Code Section 7200.5, and whereas California is the first and only state in the nation to ensure that the quality of guide dog training programs and the competency of instructors meets or exceeds the standards of other schools across the nation through a comprehensive examination and licensing procedure for California schools and their instructors. And whereas the California Council of the Blind has a longstanding mutually beneficial history of partnering with the board that has resulted in consumers both within the state and across the country who use guide dogs as their choice of mobility aid being afforded well-trained dogs at an exemplary level of training from three of the top guide dog schools in the country. And whereas the board, in order to assure the public in California that blind Californians who wish to obtain guide dogs from schools operating outside of the state and thus not subject to our strict licensing requirements will receive quality services regardless of the school from which they receive those services, has required all trainers instructing blind persons in the state of California in the use of guide dog to be licensed by the board. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization reaffirm its support of the existence of the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind, and be it further resolved that the California Council of the Blind, through Guide Dog Users of California, GDUC, its special interest affiliate, continue its longstanding collaborative relationship with the board with an aim toward the guarantee that consumers who are blind and visually impaired have access to exceptional training and services they have come to expect as California citizens. Okay, so now the committee would like you to hear a brief explanation of where CCB policy has been. First, we adopted a resolution 2012B1 last year that would seek an exemption from licensure for instructors employed by guide dog schools that are certified by an international body that would exempt them from licensure in California for providing services in California. That we sought to get a bill introduced. We were not successful, although we came close. That bill will not be introduced this year. It's conceivable, you know, everything changes from year to year. But so that's where that is. We subsequently, this is the year that the Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind, along with other boards, has its what's called a sunset review, which means it needs to have a bill that extends its life. Under current law, it would be repealed on January 1/14. So a lot of these boards, and it's in most instances pretty pro forma, but they hold hearings to decide whether, as part of the bill that's going to extend these boards for 4 years, they want other things to address, changes to be made in the statutes, etc. Donna brought together a group of people for a call prior to a committee hearing in early April that was being held on what should be done with the Guide Dog Board in terms of changes to its authority. And that call consisted, as well as Don and myself, it consisted of Mary Beth Randall, Frank Welty, Ken and Pam Metz, and did I miss anyone? And Margie Donovan, I'm sorry. Based on that call, we submitted written testimony to the committees, and the copy, and a board has also received a copy, seeking several things. First, we want fact sheets sent. We asked for fact sheets to be submitted to the school so that they could disseminate them, one of which would delineate what authority they had and didn't have in terms of advocating for guide dog users who are discriminated against. Another fact sheet would be to tell the graduates about the board's arbitration process that they currently have, that they can, the board can actually arbitrate disputes between a guide dog school and a handler. Another thing we asked for is to work on a mechanism to deal with the situation whereby they don't necessarily obtain any permission to use the image of the guide dog handler in a video that's submitted to the board to evaluate the apprentice's ability for licensure purposes. And finally, we also sought to remove the requirement that names and addresses be disclosed to the board. That testimony was submitted, and that's where all that lies at the moment. And that gives you just a factual update as to what has been done over the past few months with respect to the board. So now we will begin with the first resolution. The committee is not going to be making a recommendation on either resolution, so it will take a motion to bring the resolution to the floor, a motion from the floor, just so that we get the parliamentary understanding of how it will work. So we will begin with...
What I wish to say before we continue, in the interest of full disclosure, the reason that I called this group together, who left the call all in agreement with the testimony that CCB was giving, was because we had made attempts. CCB absolutely agrees that we go to our experts, meaning you, the membership, the affiliates, and we did attempt, Jeff Tom several times attempted to, you know, definitely receive counsel and guidance from GDUC so that we would know which way to proceed. So when we were not able to get that from the group, I decided that I would bring the president and vice president of GDUC onto a call with other members who are active within the dog user community. And so that's why CCB submitted that written testimony. So I wanted to give you that background. And Frank seeks the floor.
Yes, I apologize for the brief interruption there. I rise to a point of inquiry, and depending on the answer, I will be prepared to make a motion. My point of inquiry is, and this is directed to either Jeff or Donna, is does CCB have a formal position in place supporting understood suggestions for improvement, but supporting the rechartering of the guide dog board?
Not to my knowledge. We don't have a formal position either way.
Okay, I do have one second point of inquiry, and that would be, assuming that resolution 4 were to be passed, and I'm speaking of resolution 4, that if resolution 4 were to be passed as written, that would I be correct in assuming that the text of that resolution would probably be included in our testimony to the appropriate committees regarding the sunset? You know, the language with all the history that exists in the section in the resolution A4.
Well, I mean, you know, it's very possible. I mean, for one thing, it's going to be public anyway. Any resolution that this organization does is put on the internet. It's public.
All right, then. So, I wish to make a motion then.
Well, okay.
Just one moment. Jeff was going to say something.
The resolution is not on the. Neither resolution has yet been brought to the floor.
That is correct.
We're trying
to.
We're trying to do that.
To the floor.
Yes. One at a time.
May I make my motion?
You want to make your motion?
Yes, I wish
before
to be recognized
bringing the resolutions to the floor.
Yes. I move that the CCB adopt resolution. There, mouth is working now. 2013 A4.
You can do that.
I don't. Well, hold on one moment. It's actually out of order. It is out of order because Jeff was attempting to first bring the resolution. What was the number?
One.
Resolution one to the floor.
Then I would wish to make a point of order.
And so the point of order is that that resolution is first in the queue, and we deal with them one by one in order that they were brought. So, Jeff, if you would please read that resolution.
Okay.
One
All right.
more time for the body to vote on.
So this is resolution 2013 A1. California State Board of Guide Dogs of the Blind. Whereas the California State Board of Guide Dogs of the Blind was established in the late 1940s, primarily for the purpose of preventing fraud and protecting people from being solicited for unwarranted funds for the purpose of starting up guide dog schools without doing so in good faith. And whereas numerous illegal efforts were made whereby individuals or groups received funds for starting up a guide dog school, only to see these fundraisers take the money and disappear without any such guide dog school being established. And whereas some schools began without the consideration of any reasonable standards or best practices put in place for the purpose of training or supplying well-trained guide dogs to persons who were blind or visually impaired. And whereas this newly created board began to set up legitimate fundraising practices, guide dog school startup procedures, and licensing standards for such schools and guide dog trainers in California, and whereas other procedures were later implemented without knowledge of the general public, including guide dog handlers, which now prevent out-of-state guide dog schools from helping to maintain the best training of guide dogs for those handlers who, through informed choice, have decided to attend a reputable guide dog school outside California by working for a day or two as needed, unless the out-of-California guide dog school trainer coming to California is also licensed by the board. And whereas the California State Board of Guide Dogs of the Blind has also implemented a statute that the California guide dog schools provide the names and addresses of all California guide dog graduates attending the three California guide dog schools for no known reason. Whereas the board requires any apprentice seeking licensure to provide videos of the apprentice instructing guide dog teams without requiring the authorized use of the student's image. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization urged the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind to inform all students receiving a guide dog in California of the fact that they may be used in videos by apprentice trainers seeking their licenses, and require that apprentices obtain the student's permission to use their image. And be it further resolved that the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind inform guide dog handlers in California as to their ability to assist said handlers in cases of access issues in such places as housing, transportation, businesses, and in all areas of accessibility covered by both state and federal legislation. And be it further resolved that prospective guide dog handlers be allowed to make an informed choice of attending an out-of-state guide dog school as their choice of their choice and receive updated guide dog skill maintenance by their school of choice without that trainer being licensed in California. And be it further resolved that the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind provide handouts to the three guide dog schools in California and other schools, should they be established in California, to give to the graduates, explaining in general the board's purpose as a consumer entity. And be it further resolved that this organization find sponsors in the legislature to sponsor such legislation to cover the above, should that be necessary. And be it further resolved that if compliance with the above is not possible, CCB will not support continuation of the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind and will seek legislation to have that board dissolved. And the committee makes no recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I move this resolution.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor to move this resolution. We have several seconds. Do we have discussion?
Madam Chair, this is Frank Welty. I wish to move an amendment to this resolution. I move that the final resolve clause be stricken from the resolution. I wish to speak to the amendment.
Okay, so this is an amendment. By the way, I do want to say that, and I want to remind folks that when you call for the floor, state your name, as Frank has done, so that I can recognize you, and then we will get a mic to you. So we have an amendment on the floor, and we have a several seconds. And I guess, and I'm confused here for a second. It is an unfriendly amendment.
This is correct.
It is an unfriendly amendment, so it will be debated. And what I would like to ask, because we will have debate here, is that we do something that's not necessarily a part of our convention policy, but I'd like to have pros and cons, and I'm going to start the timer at 20 minutes, and we will take it in order, and I'd like to have Frank. Frank, are you,
yes.
You're obviously pro the amendment.
Yes, correct.
So let me have you speak first. Actually, we would like a con after that. Go ahead, Frank.
First off, I would not characterize this as a friendly amendment, I don't know that I would call it an unfriendly amendment per se. However, mm-hmm. I have two primary reasons for presenting this amendment, and both of them for similar reasons. First of all, and they're primarily related to the practicality of the current legislative situation. First of all, given that we are in the process of the sunset review, and given that the CCB, depending, is currently on a trajectory to support the continuance of the guide dog board, and that possibly strengthened by a possible introduction and adoption of Resolution A4, it would seem that it would not be consistent to decide to have a resolution that includes language opposing the continued existence of the board. Also, for practical reasons, assuming that we go forward with our support for the board, with the understanding that we have certain expectations that are well explained in this resolution, that it is unlikely that there would be any opportunity this year to introduce language, or to introduce a bill opposing the continued existence of the board during this legislative year, simply because it would take that long for the process regarding the board's sunset to play out during this year. So we wouldn't be in a position to have a new bill introduced opposing the board for certain reasons prior to this next year anyway. So that clause is, I believe, premature and inconsistent with other positions of this organization.
Okay, we have someone who is against the amendment. Is that Ken Metz? And you are against the amendment, correct? Okay, Ken?
Thank you. Number one, I don't believe that we have, even though we've stated here that we would like to see the board dissolved,
It's only if, in fact, the board does not work with us in order to obtain the goals that we have set forward in the various clauses. We have looked for many years with the board, for some 60 years that the board was in effect, for instance, as an example. They went ahead and allowed other guide dog schools throughout the country to send people to come in here and do maintenance work with their graduates to help them if they were having any issues with their guide dogs. And all of a sudden, after some 60 years, even though I understand that this particular situation was on their books as part of their statutory efforts, after 60 years, they finally said, oh, now we want to go ahead and make sure that all the other schools who are going to come into California to do maintenance work are licensed. So what we are actually saying here, and the reason I'm saying that we would need to dissolve the board if they do not work with us, we're not saying to dissolve the board. We're saying to dissolve it only if they don't work with us on setting up the various clauses that are stated in this resolution. And that's where the amendment, that's where I'm opposing it. We feel that people have the right through informed choice to go out of state as well as in state to decide where they want to get their guide dogs, and that they should have the same type of capability of maintenance throughout the life of that the use of that guide dog. With the way this particular situation is going right now, people are not being given that choice. People are being told that in order to get their guide dog school, whether it be Seeing Eye, whether it be Leader Dog, whether it be any of the other guiding eyes, that we're saying that because we have a state board of guide dogs for the blind, and this was stated even in some of the argument of this resolution, we were told that, okay, well, because we have the board, we have the best schools, guide dog schools in the country. Well, I think if you said that to Seeing Eye, who started in 1928, there would be some opposition to that. I think if you said it to Leader Dogs, who's been around for many years, there would be opposition. And I don't think that just because California has a state board of guide dogs, they have done a great job in some of its regulation. There's no doubt that they saved Californians a lot of money in some of these startup schools that really were being put together for the wrong purpose. Obviously, it was a money-making thing and not something to help people get guide dogs. So therefore, I feel that the state board needs to actually work with us so that people can use informed choice to obtain their guide dogs and to maintain their guide dogs with good work quality.
Okay. Point of information by Mitch. Even the people with the AL.
And this is a Jeff question, Jeff. And this will determine how I vote on this amendment. Would such legislation even be appropriate, given that statutorily the board will be going through a sunset hearing process? I mean, if someone introduced a bill this year to eliminate the board, is that really feasible, given that there's already a statute in place calling for a sunset hearing?
Well, the answer would be no, but of course this, you know, to be totally fair about it, this resolution doesn't put any kind of timeline. So, I mean, when it says that we're not going to, if they don't support continuation, it doesn't say when they're going to pull the plug and require legislation to dissolve it. So I don't know if that's a full answer to your question or not, but you're correct that you know, realistically, it's, you know, this year you're not going to see any legislation introduced to dissolve the board.
Well, that helps. So, I know how I'm voting now.
Kathy Skivers. Kathy Skivers is, we are now, She is supportive of the amendment. So, Kathy Skivers, you have the floor.
Yes, in listening to this, they're very long resolutions, and you really have to. I understand what you're after, what should be done. I think the Guide Dog Board has done some very fine things. They've done some questionable things. They haven't done it the way I think it should be done. What I have a problem with this resolution is that we're saying you're doing this wrong, which we should. I mean, we think you should do this a better way. But when we get to that last clause, which is what this amendment is, we've always said that we're going to do thus and so, how we're going to resolve a situation that we don't like. But to come along and say that unless you agree with us, it has to be, to me, it is saying, do it this way. If you don't, it has a threat in there. I don't like to see anything say, if you don't do as we say, we're going to go for legislation. I'd rather see something in there that says that, as we have before, that we will take all legal remedies necessary to solve the situation. I don't like to think about, I would feel if I voted for this, which I probably won't, is that we're threatening. I don't like to say you either do it our way or we're going to sue you, and we can sue and we'll do legislation. We would anyhow if we felt it was necessary. But I just would, I feel uncomfortable with it for that reason. I'm going to vote with this amendment.
And remember, this is exactly just discussion on the amendment.
That's
to
right.
To remove that last clause.
That's right. I am.
Yes. And I'm saying that for clarification for the audience, because I heard some folks saying, well, the resolution, is it the, so it was clarification. Okay. We have Margie. Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam President. Margie Donovan. I rise to speak in opposition to the amendment. I've heard all the comments. I think this organization, until recently, for many of years, has had a representative sitting on the Guide Dog Board, has represented this organization, has negotiated with the Guide Dog Board to adequately represent this organization. And we, over the years, we have found this board to continuously restrict our rights as blind and visually impaired individuals. And recently, it has severely restricted our rights in the past 3 years. I think this, the amendment is saying, hey, folks, it's time you listen to us. We are tired of our rights being restricted. I recall the days where we told BART, no more. We want edge detection. We did not negotiate with BART. We went into the courts. I recall the day when ACB was in San Francisco, and in a heartbeat, we rallied up, got buses, and went down and picketed DOT. Our word meant something. And that's what we are saying here. Hey, Guide Dog Board, listen to us or else. That is the word we are putting out. And if they listen to us, then we'll work with them. But damn it, it's time they listen to us and they quit restricting our rights. Right now, people whose dogs are being attacked from seeing eye, from out-of-state schools, are having to be retired because out-of-state instructors cannot come in and work with those dogs and get them back working. Those dogs are being retired. Dogs who are being hit by cars are having to be retired because out-of-state school instructors cannot come in to this state and work with those dogs. $50,000 dogs are having to be retired. All we're asking is that this board quit restricting us and listen to us and work with the council. Thus far, they have not done that. I encourage my blind brothers and sisters in this audience to vote no on this amendment. Please vote yes to get the board to work with this. We will not sunset this. We will not sunset this board if they will work with us. Thank you.
Okay, I hear several people seeking the floor. Before I recognize anyone, Do we have another person in favor of the amendment? You're in favor of the amendment? Okay, one moment. Don't go yet, Ed. Don't go yet, Ed. Do we have another person who is opposed to the amendment? Did I hear a yes? Okay. We will recognize Charlene in favor of the amendment. We will recognize Vita opposed to the amendment. And then we will call for the question because our 20 minutes will be up. Charlene, you have the floor.
Thank you. I'm in favor of this because, again, as it's been said, disbanding the guide dog board is not a good idea. Recently, a school called Praise Guide Dogs tried to get started. They were not put together well. They didn't have a good program. People could have had real problems with dogs. This happens in other states. And I tell people, it's not a buyer beware when you get a guide dog. You need to have a dog that's properly trained. Having dogs from other schools outside of California, I know that there are schools that do not meet the standards of California. If we don't have the guide dog board, I hate to think of some of the things that could be happening. We could in the future...
Order on the floor, please.
We could in the future make a resolution to take more drastic steps. But at this time, with the sunset coming up and what's going on, I am in favor of removing that last statement, so I support it.
Vita Zavoli will be our last speaker. Speaking opposed.
Hello. I can't add too much more to Margie. The last clause there is way, we're not saying this is tomorrow. This is way, way down the road. We're just asking them to work with us. But if you don't give some sort of what if at the end, there's no need for them to step up and do anything. And that's my concern.
Okay. All those in favor of supporting the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed to the amendment? The amendment is defeated. Okay, now we have the resolution on the floor for vote. Do we have a motion to support? Do we? Oh, there is a motion. I apologize. It's discussion. Okay, before we... And I'm letting you know, before we do discussion, I have the timer again. I am ready. We will start with 20 minutes. And Frank, point of inquiry. Go ahead.
Yes, my point of inquiry is, Jeff, could you reread the third whereas clause?
Yes, as soon as I can find it, I can do that.
Not the whereas clause, the resolve clause, excuse me. The third resolve clause.
There's a big difference.
Quite a big difference, yes.
As we know.
I stand corrected.
That's okay. You've been in there with us, too.
Hang on. That's the second. That's the first. That's the second.
He's counting. He's almost there. I heard say the second. What comes after the second?
Pretty sure this is the third, Frank. If it's not, you can let me know. Okay. Be it further resolved that prospective guide dog handlers be allowed to make an informed choice of attending an out-of-state guide dog school of their choice and receive updated guide dog skill maintenance by their school of choice without that trainer being licensed in California.
Thank you. I wish to propose an amendment. This is Frank Welty. I wish to, and no, I'm not going to do an endless series of amendments, but this one is important. I wish to be recognized to propose an amendment.
Okay, Frank wishes to. Now, this is in order, correct? I think it is, but. Okay, perfect. Go ahead, Frank.
I wish to amend.
Order from the floor, please, so that people could hear what the amendment is. Thank you, Frank. Go ahead.
I propose that the third resolve clause be that the following language be substituted for the third resolve clause. And be it further resolved that the council seek legislative or regulatory language, or rather seek the implementation of legislative or regulatory language to establish a temporary certification, a temporary instructor certification for out of a sort of a temporary category of a category of temporary instructor certification for instructors from out of state guide dog schools that are members in good standing of the International Guide Dog Federation to practice, to provide maintenance services to their graduates.
Okay. I have to ask the question of, do the makers believe that this is a friendly amendment? I hear one no. How about the other? Point of clarification?
I withdraw my no. I'm a little concerned. If Frank can clarify, I'm a little concerned to send that off to the Guide Dog Board, temporary certification. I would want a lot more specificity about that, because it could, you know, I just want more specificity. And Frank, if you could actually give some guidelines for that, I might see it as a friendly amendment.
And they would need to be obviously written into the amendment. And
let's go back to Frank, or who's it go to?
Frank, more specificity.
Sure, I would be willing to let me provide a little more language and
if you could try to be succinct.
Yes, it would be language authorizing authorizing. I'm trying to remember my language here. Authorizing temporary certification that would allow instructors from out-of-state guide dog schools that are members in good standing of the International Guide Dog Federation to provide maintenance services to their graduates for periods of no more than 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah, temporary is a vague.
Let me remove temporary as saying that it would, I would say that it would be a visiting instructor status rather than temporary.
Okay. Okay, so if you could, if you could state it.
Yeah.
For the recording, so we can
Let me say it one more time. Then the amendment would be it further resolved that the council will seek legislative and or regulatory language calling on the Guide Dog Board to establish a category of visitor instructor certification that would permit instructors from out-of-state guide dog schools that are members in good standing of the International Guide Dog Federation to provide maintenance services to their clients, to provide maintenance services to their clients for visits of up to 2 weeks at a time.
Okay. Ken, you or another, do you accept it as friendly? Okay. Any more discussion?
And I'll be after that.
Mitch and then Jeff.
I had really hoped to avoid this, and this is why I loathe wordsmithing from the floor. And I'm going to either be the most popular guy in the world or the most unpopular. That third whereas, followed by the final whereas regarding the abolition, are in contradiction. I'm going to move that both resolution 2013 A1 and A4 be tabled until the fall, during which time GDUC, Ms. Donovan, and the Resolutions Committee Chair work together on one resolution which will state our position definitively.
Before it gets read, I don't know if is that legal.
Roger.
It is for one.
Roger. What I am asking, because we had a resounding seconds, what I am asking is, must we read four one more time and then, or do we table them each?
You must take the vote. I'm not on mic.
You know what? There are many people with the name of Roger Peterson in this room. And so I'm speaking to Roger Peterson. And can I have order? Can I have order, please?
There's a motion to table. You can't do anything except take a vote on it.
Thank you, Roger. Okay.
Point of order, then? Point of inquiry?
Point of inquiry by Jeff.
Okay. Roger, though, here's my question. Is it, and I'm not, this isn't, well, no. Here's
Don't
my question.
Apologize.
Is it valid to have a motion to table Resolution 4 before it has actually been brought to the floor? No. But no.
Right.
We brought it up for purposes of reading it, but it was not brought to the floor
Correct.
Yet. Because only number one has been. Is that valid? If it is, I'm fine with it. I just want to hear an answer.
I think you're probably right that it could be argued that we have to table them separately. I'm not sure. Since they're very closely related motions, I would... I guess I would say that the president can do it one way or the other, but the point is that we got a table. You can argue that this is all one discussion, even though there are two
it
resolutions.
Is.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
I would
Parliament.
Say you can table the whole thing.
Okay, it is all one discussion. There are two separate resolutions being dealt with. And I will, Margie asked for a point of information.
Point of order for
point
the
of
parliamentarian.
Order. Roger.
I do understand that a motion to table takes precedence, but what I don't recall for the parliamentarian, is there questions or debates or whatever you want to call it, speaking in favor and against on a motion to table, Mr. Parliamentarian?
No.
No.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Roger is saying something. Can we get a microphone to Roger before we go to Frank?
There are other motions like a motion to refer or postpone that are that are debatable, but the motion to table is not debatable.
It's not. Okay. A motion to refer, et cetera, those are debatable. A motion to table is not, and we have that on the floor. So we had a motion to table. We had a number of seconds. We had lots of points of information. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Abstentions? The ayes have it. Thank you. Okay, folks, Jeff is having a technical difficulty, so we're going to do a door prize. And the door prize will be a can of macadamia nuts. And Cam Ackerman, are you in the room? Acker. Cam Acker, I apologize. Cam, she is in the room. Cam is in the room. Yay! Wonderful. We have... another cash prize, $25 from the Bayview chapter, and we have a can of macadamia nuts to go with it. And what kind of macadamia nuts are those? Milk chocolate macadamia nuts. John McCoy, are you in the room? No, John McCoy. Bert Yanagita, are you in the room? No, Bert. Nancy Unger, are you in the room? Joan Groves, are you in the room? Robin, R-A-Y-N-E. Bell Hicks, are you in the room? Judy Wilkinson, are you in the room? Yay, Judy!
Kim. Kim.
Okay. Jeff needs Mr. Matz to come up to the front while we continue doing more door prizes. What I would state is whenever anyone calls for the floor, you must say your name so that I might recognize you by name. And we are, because there are lots of people, I don't recognize everybody's voices, and I want to acknowledge you by name. So, okay, we have a Harry and David box of goodies, lots of goodies. And we have Maria Casanova. Are you in the room? She is not. Nancy McMaster. Are you in the room? No. Linda Perel. Are you in the room? Linda Perel. Yay. Bravo.
I thought Gabe left.
Okay.
Oh, Gabe, is Gabe out there?
Okay. Is Gabe out there?
Can you come up here, Gabe, please? Thought you took off.
There is a technology crisis up here, and
those guide dog resolutions just shot the others.
The guide dog resolutions just ate up all the other ones, and it's Mitch's fault. Hard copy Braille. Hard I knew Mitch was going to say
That's
that.
Right.
Okay. Mitch says hard copy Braille is a wonderful invention.
We're seeing if he
Okay, someone is seeking for the floor and they're not saying their names, so I can't give it to them. Kathy Skivers. Kathy Skivers wants the floor.
Since you don't have Braille, how technology involved are they? Would you like me to do my brief history thing and on the trust maybe while they're doing that, or are they not that involved?
No.
Kathy, how we can have you do your history.
I wasn't going to do history. I was just going to make some announcements and things. But
yes,
I just thought if you're going to have a long delay, we could do that. If not, do it after.
What Gabe just shared with me is that they'll be up in 30 seconds.
Well, I can't do it in 30 seconds.
I know. I'm sorry. Okay. Peter Pardini, 30 seconds, or did you need more?
No, we should be good.
Okay, let's do one more door prize while he's main menuing, and let's see.
Thank you.
We're going to do a macadamia nuts. Dry roasted macadamia nuts. Vern Smith, are you in the room? No Vern Smith. Roger Peterson, I know you're here. Woo! Thank you, thank you. Roger Peterson is here. So we still have two $25 cash prizes. We have one more box of cookies from the Hawaiian Cookie Company, Honolulu Cookie Company. And we have Maui onion garlic macadamia nuts. Jeff said he's ready, so Jeff, it's all yours.
Okay.
Order from the floor, please.
This is submitted by Gabe and Becky Griffith, and it's resolution 2013-A3, and it's on guide dogs to the blind. Whereas, I don't think this will be quite as controversial as the last two. Whereas Guide Dogs for the Blind, GDB, has had the reputation
Order,
of being
please.
One of the best dog guide schools in the United States. And whereas in recent years, GDB has restructured various aspects of its programs, including puppy raising, guide training, and class experience. And whereas these changes include puppies spending less time with the raisers and in guide training, more reliance on food rewards, and shorter class periods for guide dog teams. And whereas these changes have resulted in dogs being placed with handlers at a much younger age and graduates receiving dogs that are not as work-ready as they once were, and whereas these practices result in graduates needing to do significant additional work in order to complete the raising and guide training process after graduation, and whereas graduates, especially first-time graduates, need a dog that is ready to safely guide. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization urge GDB to return to their previous training practices in regards to puppy raising and guide training. The committee recommends a due pass, and I so move.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay, we have number five. This is Gabe Griffith again. He was busy this time. PDF documents.
Oh, no.
Whereas portable document
order from the
files,
floor, please.
PDF, created by Adobe, have largely become the dominant document format in the business environment. And whereas many people who are blind or visually impaired use assistive technology to access electronic files, and whereas PDF documents have to be created in an accessible format for screen readers to access them, and whereas the default setting for PDF document creation is to create an inaccessible PDF document, and whereas it is, therefore, necessary in order to create an accessible PDF document, for a person to manually check the accessibility box. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization contact Adobe and urge them to make the accessible document setting the default rather than an option. And be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be forwarded to the American Council of the Blind for consideration at a 2013 annual conference and convention. And the committee recommends a due pass, and I so move.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay. And then this issue-oriented resolutions, number six, is submitted by Ken Metz, and it relates to blind persons on juries. Whereas in 1976, legislation sponsored by the California Council of the Blind to allow blind persons to serve on juries was passed by the California legislature and signed by the governor. And whereas since the passage of this legislation, numerous blind persons have served on juries with much success. And whereas as part of the jury selection process, prospective jurors are required to fill out questionnaires and other forms. And whereas in order for a prospective juror who is blind to fill out these documents, it is necessary that the court system provide reader assistance. And whereas during trial, jurors may be required to carefully review documentary and photographic evidence, thus requiring additional assistance. And whereas the California Supreme Court has adopted a rule of court requiring the judiciary to accommodate to the needs of, among others, jurors with disabilities. And whereas many jurisdictions, in accordance with this rule, supply assistance to help jurors who are blind to read and fill out forms. And whereas some jurisdictions do not comply with the requirements of this rule and instead require jurors or potential jurors who are blind to supply their own readers, now therefore be it resolved that this organization inform the Judicial Council of the failure of some jurisdictions to comply with requirements for the accommodation of blind people who are called to serve on juries. And be it further resolved that this organization assist its members who have been denied the accommodations discussed in this resolution to contact the Judicial Council. The committee recommends it do pass, and I so move.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. So we are now down to our last two, but far, certainly not least. Number seven, on volunteers.
Can we please have order on the floor?
Get myself a drink of water first.
Margie, sit.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff.
Whereas the outstanding efforts of the volunteers of the 2013 spring, that's the last time we'll say that in this committee, to 2013 spring conference and convention of the California Council of the Blind have helped to make this event a resounding success. Now, therefore, be resolved that this organization express its profound appreciation for the outstanding work of the volunteers of the 2013 spring conference and convention of the California Council of the Blind. And man, there were a lot of volunteers.
Yeah.
And the committee recommends it do pass, and I so move.
Second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries, everyone. Let's give a huge Woo-hoo. Applause for all of our volunteers.
You know, I have to tell about a 10-second story. Last week, I talked to some of the Girl Scouts that came here, and right before I talked to them, so 1 week ago, they went to a mortuary to find out about morticians, and this week, they're finding out about blind people. I don't know what that says, but you can be the judge. Okay.
Oh, dear.
Resolution 8 is on hotel staff. Hotel appreciation. Resolved by the California Council of the Blind, et cetera, that this organization express its appreciation for the outstanding services provided prior to and during its spring 2013 conference and convention by the staff of the Arden West Hilton Hotel. And be it further resolved that the president of this organization forward this resolution to the hotel management. The committee recommends a due pass, and I so move.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Let's give a huge hand for all of them.
Woo-hoo.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have a motion? Wait. Do we need a motion to accept your report? Yes, we do. Okay. We move to accept the report of the Resolutions Committee. We have seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you, Jeff, and everyone on the Resolutions Committee. And by the way, again, if anyone seeks the floor, if you think, very good. You know, yeah. As I said, please state your name because from up here you may sound like Kermit the Frog, and I don't know.
Look,
go ahead, Mitch.
I am doing, or I am volunteering to do something that I may perhaps regret.
Ooh. Is this being recorded? Yes. Good.
However,
go ahead.
In the name of mediation and all of that good stuff. I am prepared, Madam President, to chair the discussion that I proposed in the motion to table. That is, I'm prepared to work by teleconference with the leadership of GDUC, Ms. Donovan. If Mr. Welty would submit to me via email his second amendment, which I liked personally, but ... I am prepared to, and I have a toll-free teleconference number that I use for ACB business. I'm prepared to bird dog this process so that when we come back in October, we have a solution that, with any luck, everybody will be able to support.
Okay, now,
Charles, I said the leadership of GDUC.
And the leadership
includes Mr. Brown.
And so wait. Okay. What I am prepared to do here today, and everyone knows how to reach me. What I'm going to say, because we won't have yelling on the floor, is Mitch Pomerantz will chair, Jeff Thomas, chair of the Resolutions Committee, will serve on there, and Frank Welty, who is identified, Margie Donovan, and we will continue these discussions. Mary Beth Randall, who is president of GDUC, who's been on all of our calls, will continue to be a part of the group, and will continue more after this session is over.
And so, Don Brown, Madam President.
Mary Beth Randall? Are you stating that that you would wish for Don Brown to be on that committee? Or would you wish to discuss with your board and your group, and you as president of GDUC would contact me and let me know who you wish to serve?
Well, actually, I'll just state that yesterday GDUC had voted to have a task force just to solely deal with resolution number one.
Wait.
And so because there were members who had concerns
correct.
About some of the issues. And so at that time, the task force was consistent of Ken Metz, Margie Donovan, Don Brown, myself, and Frank Welty.
So the only person, and Vita.
Oh, and Vita. I apologize, Vita.
Okay. So, Mary Beth, you as president of GDUC must email me because I won't remember either.
I will do that.
All of those names, and we will get things going under the chairmanship of Mitch Pomerantz.
And Mary Beth, we will put together at least, well, you will send me resolution 04. If Margie, who may have left by now, sends me resolution 01, actually, Jeff, you can send them both to me. Frank sends me the second proposed amendment. We will have, I promise, our first teleconference meeting either in May or in early June.
And Mary Beth, when you email me, I would like inclusive in that email everyone's current email addresses. Because I will be a part of that group as well. Thank you. All right. I don't know your voice, so please say. Okay. I hear Bill Gillespie and I hear Roger Peterson.
Who's first?
Bill Gillespie and then Roger Peterson.
Madam President and members of this body, I'd like to give a big round of applause to Ed Branch and Mary Jo for all the hard work they've done this weekend.
Yay, Mary Lou and Ed!
Billy Joe, Bobby Joe.
Madam Chair. Great.
Roger.
As a point of personal privilege affecting the Assembly, I would like to suggest that we figure out some kind of way to put whatever it is in the water in San Diego that's in the water here so that we'll have the high quality and quantity of volunteers that at future conventions
yes.
that we have to hear.
Yes. Pamology.
I just wanted to do this before people start leaving. and Mitch made reference to it already. The convention we'll be having in the fall in Del Mar begins on October 17th, which I read in the Braille Blind Californian. And so that means that the credentials need to be in 30 days ahead, which means it's September 17th. So I'm just letting you guys know ahead of time, like I tried to do last time, so that we can get as many chapters seated as possible and so that Ed has a lot of time to braille, because he brails it all for me, too. You know, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. At this time, I want to give the floor to Kathy Skivers, because someone called for me and I didn't know who their name was because I didn't say or I didn't hear. Kathy Skivers is going to share with us a little bit about the history. And then after Kathy shares with us, I heard Robert Wendt ask for the floor and Linda Perel. So let's give our attention to Kathy Skivers. And let's give her a warm round of applause.
Actually, this should be titled A Progress Report. Uh-huh. And Lord knows there hasn't been a lot. But anyway, a long time ago, it was decided to try to do the history of the California Council of the Blind. Now, there was a 50-year history done by Perry Sundquist and Patricia Urena. And it was okay and very good, and we're keeping that as part of our history. We finally found a couple of print copies of it, and we brailled it. And that's going to be a part of the history, but we noticed little things like very few women were mentioned in there, which I have took big exception to.
I
because
agree.
Women have always done a lot in this organization. But we've had a couple of committees. They've been formed and reformed, and we did a lot of work. And back in the old days, we first started, Bernice and Roger and Chris Gray and I were living in close area enough to get together. And so we came a few times and got together, and we did some history, and we put it on the computer, which is a nowadays thing to do. But then, after we did quite a few meetings and wrote quite a bit of stuff, including brailing the 50-year history, we can still have that, but the computer did a thing they said crashed, and I'm told there was a backup for those things, but we didn't have a backup, and we lost it. And there was a lot of work done, which is no excuse for why we're not further than we are. Through the years, we have had people give us material in print and braille mostly, and that's all housed right now with me. People like John and Maria Lopez, George Fogarty gave us 8 wonderful tapes, which I brailled. He recorded them, and I have brailled those, so we have that. Juliet Esterly gave us a lot. There have been just people through the years that have given us all kinds of material, and we have it, John DeFrancesco and many others. I'm awfully glad that we don't have report cards for getting assignments done, because I've had a lot of assignments through the years, and I finished them. I'm not prepared to say if they were good jobs or bad jobs, but they were done jobs. And this is the first time that I've been lagging like this, but we're going to be doing some work. I have talked with Lynn Laird. Everybody knows who she is, I think. Lynn has agreed to help me and work with me. The American Council did the right thing when they got people to write people a vision, because it's very hard, we're finding, and we know, we've proved it, for a committee to write a history. What we're going to try to do pretty quickly is get the Hall of Famers up so that you can put them up on the web and put a little about them. That's going to be our first move we're going to do. Then we're going to, now I have a friend who has a, I always hate to talk about instruments, cameras and things, because, and computer things too, I call them all the wrong names. Anyway, she has, I think it's a video camera where you sit and talk and it takes a picture, and she has that. So we're going to, because it's very hard to read all the stuff or get into print what we have in braille and all kinds of things the other way around, print to wherever, we're going to do a lot of the history things on that. She tells me that can easily be put to CD, and this can be done pretty economically. years ago, you gave us, you said we could have $1,500 to do the history. To date, we haven't used any of that money, and we're hoping that you get a lot of money pretty soon, so by the time we get this together, you can then go about putting it into what other formats you want to get it into. But at least we're going to make progress just as soon as the convention is over. We all know that I need to hurry up and get this history done because a number of reasons. A lot of it will go when I do, and I've been asking up there, please let me stay here till the history's done. And Roger told me one time that he thought maybe that's why I was still here. I was holding out to get the history done. But anyway, there's some wonderful things in there. We really can be very proud of ourselves. We started out as the California Council for the Blind in 1934. We changed the date to Of the Blind. I'm embarrassed and ashamed to say I don't remember what the date was because I'm the gal that got it changed or put the motion out to change it from for to of, and it took two tries. The first time I tried it in a year, it lost big time. Boy, I tell you, it went down like few things I had seen to that point, and I was brand new. You know, I came right in, so I thought we should change the name. It said for the blind. I said, I don't know, understand why you say that. It's of the blind. It's us. So it lost. And Dr. Perry came up to me and he said, now, he said, you don't want you to feel bad about that. You lost because you lost your temper. That's the way doctor talked. And I said, I did not lose because I lost my temper. I said, I lost because you told your good old boys to say that they shouldn't do it, either that or they didn't know, you didn't tell them anything and they didn't know what to do, so they thought that's what you wanted to do and they didn't do it. But in any case, the next year I tried it and he came and he hugged me and he said, now you see there, you tried it again and it passed. And I said, yes, I know. And he said, well, I told you if you tried it again, it would be all right. And he said, now you see it works. I said, no, all it means, doctor, is that you gave the word to the boys and it passed. So he hugged me and told me that sometimes he thought I was impossible. I don't think he ever changed his mind about that. We then, if anybody knows that date, we would like to have that. We had some trouble with this history because we did not keep good records. The ones that were kept were down in Chatsworth when they had the big earthquake, and what the earthquake didn't do, the people with the water and the fire hoses and all that finished, and we lost a lot of things. Then Bob Campbell had a wonderful record. He had 40 years of things in his home that he kept, file cabinets and the whole thing. Well, when he died, his son inherited the house and everything, and he had George Fogarty and Margaret Noah go in, and in a week they cleared out everything that was in there. And we didn't get to keep much of that, so we lost that. So I've been grateful. We have a 1959. There was a time when the council broke up. The first group that left the Federation was the Associated Blind of California. And we went back in 1959. I was editor of the what was called Council Bulletin. Now it's the Californian. And we have a Braille actual copy of the 1959 last thing that I did as editor that has a resignation of Bob Campbell and all the reasons why we were leaving in there. We do actually have that document, and we have the one that followed immediately that was written by Beverly Gladden. She was what Beverly Hammer later, and that followed within a month, and Kletzing was present by then, and those two things are worth seeing. They're different. We said why we left, and they said we were a small handful, but what they didn't say was what had been the leadership left. So that small handful had Dr. Perry with it, so we thought we were in good company. Anyhow, we then have a history of a lot of firsts. We've been first in a lot of things. I believe that we were the first to have the California Connection, both English and Spanish. And when we started, many people didn't even have anything, and some states still don't have anything that lets them hear through the state what's happening. We had the first time that we really got in and worked with other groups was when we went in to work for the HIV. I don't know how many of you knew that we had an AIDS project in the 90s, and we worked with the deaf and the hemophiliacs and some other groups, or four or five groups, and we worked with them, and we were the only kind of organization of that kind in the world. And that's the only time, to my knowledge, that the California Council ever got any money from the state. They gave us, we were part of a grant that was given for that. And, of course, like it always happens, they cut the budget and cut everybody 10%, and they cut ours 40%. And so we weren't able to continue. We just made it just about 4 years. But I think that's one of the few times that the California Council actually employed some of our members. Our members got some money to cover their expenses and then made a little bit more just to travel and do the HIV thing all over the state, and we did that. We're pretty proud of that. And we made some good alliances when we went into SB 105 and the deaf situation came up. I recall in the hearing, some lady said, well, what about deaf people? What are they, hamburger? And Chris, but what happened was we had made a good relationship with the deaf group in that situation with the AIDS thing, and they came along and supported us, and we supported them. And they would. We got to the point where we would have the lady who was deaf would say, no, we're not going to talk about that today. They don't have their Braille, and you know they have to have their Braille. And I would say, no, we can't do that because you know she has a right to the interpreter. We're not going to do that till you get one. So we made a pretty good alliance, and that kept on long afterwards. And we still keep in touch now and then, not so often, but we still do. We're not going to have time to go through all this, but what I would like to say to you is if you have an original of any kind of a, if you can tell us the date of when we became of the blind, and there are a few other things we need to ask for you. If you have anything to give to our history, if you have a copy of that 50-year history, whatever you have that you think it marks a date and time that you can give us, we'd appreciate. I'm not going to name all the committee members now because they've been changed, and anyway, I keep calling the other ones that weren't, but Bernice is still with us, and Al Gill, and Don Queen, and others, and Roger, of course. Roger was a godsend to us. He is wherever he goes in these committees, but I tell you, I'm afraid we're going to wear him out because everybody wants him to do everything, and I say that, and then I turn around and ask him to do something. Anyway, the California Council has been and always will be, I hope, a very vibrant organization. And I'm so happy that Jeff Tom is handling the legislation. I feel bad, though, that we're not able to pay him. But all the time, every time I've heard the man do a legislative report or heard him do resolutions, and way back I've been listening to him do resolutions, I've always thought, oh, gee, what a thing it would be if we could get him into the state capitol. And I live long enough to see it, Jeff. I think that's pretty good. I don't want you to lose heart, though, because we're hoping the council will get more money. And every now and again, I play the lotto, and you're on my list of things to do when I win. Anyway, I think the thing that broke the organization back in the old days was that the Federation had appointed a board of directors and they didn't believe in consulting people. They would hand down what I called edicts. They would say, this is the way it is. And even some of their board members weren't advised. So as you go through, make sure that you realize that we all are part of it. We all should be included. We all should work. And don't think that you can't do something to help because you can.
Yes.
When I came here, I had read about legislation that Dr. Perry wrote in a book I read when I was a little girl. I think it was called The All Story. And the last half of it was legislation. And I read it before I really understood exactly what it all meant. But I did know that somewhere there were blind people that wanted to get together and help blind people become what they could be. And when I got here, they told me not to worry. Blind people had been successful, and even though I was broken on my own and scared to death and almost homeless, they said, we can help you, and we will, and they did. And that's one of the reasons I've always felt I want to help in the council. The other reason is that when the breakup came, Dr. Perry asked me if I got the chance to ever get the boys and girls back together, he'd like me to do it. And so I was happy to be president from 97 to 2002, because I was keeping my promise to that man, and I had a great deal of respect and admiration and love for him. Anyway, I want to leave you with a little bit. I hope you don't mind. I hope I haven't gone too long. But there's a little bit of a thing last night. We had those table hopping little questions.
Yes, yes.
I got to make a tiny correction, okay? They said that the hotel was gotten in 1996. No, it was the Beverly Garland. But, folks, Mitch was president, and somebody got that hotel. And I was the first person to get that hotel. And that Beverly Garland was a hotel from down there. I tell you, I was surprised when I got to see that we had the registration out in the yard. I'd never seen that before.
Oh, my. Oh.
You were sitting out in the sunshine with the table there. Barbara and Marnie were out there taking everybody's name. That was okay.
Wow.
Then the restaurant didn't get along with the hotel. There was an argument of some sort going on. And so the restaurant would tell you, yes, you could go down there and get your meal, or to tell you that the hotel was closed or the restaurant was closed. Then you'd go down there, and they'd fuss at you because you hadn't gone to the restaurant. Well, you know, it got a little confusing. They didn't like each other, apparently.
I guess not.
And then I can't leave you without telling you about the president's suite. My living room, sitting room, was on the third floor. My bedroom, the rest of my suite, was on the fourth floor. In between, there was a long flight of stairs, and it had banisters, so I thought it'd be okay. I didn't like much like when the phone would ring downstairs, I'd be upstairs. When it rang upstairs, I'd be downstairs. But anyhow, I said, I will go down these stairs, and they said, you have to have your suite moved. I said, no, I'm not going to have him say that the first time he had a woman president, the first thing she had to do was get another room. We're not doing that. So I showed me the banisters. I can walk down from up here. Well, Tom O'Sullivan, some of you will remember him, went and stepped down on one or two of the stairs, and he said, I don't think you should do that. And I said, why not? And he said, the stairs kind of sway. And I said, they do what? And he said, they kind of move side to side. And, and I said, oh, they surely wouldn't expect a person to use that. So Dominic Martinelli, some of you will remember, said, just a minute. And he went over there, and he went down about four steps, and he says, you're not doing it. You're going to have to take the elevator. We also don't want them to say that the first time they had a woman president, she fell down the stairs trying to get from her bedroom to her living room. So anyway, that hotel, I just want you to know it was 1997 that we went there. Somebody said it burned down. I didn't even say too bad.
Kathy, were you visiting around that, you know, maybe if you were in the area around that time?
We had a very sad thing. Juliet Esterly, Ben Esterly, and Carol Blake fell on the sidewalk there. They were injured. And they had quite a bad time.
Ouch.
But then I thought the ultimate and the end of it all was Saturday night. I heard police cars, people were running around.
Wow.
And it turns out that there were a bunch of bikers that hung out there, and there was some sort of a raid in the bar. And all I could do was hope and all of our guys were up in the hospitality room.
That's what I was just going to ask. Great.
Anyway, if you have the time to and would be interested in maybe helping do some typing, or putting things over on the computer. I know that Johansson is going to help me, Jeremy. And so is Lynn. But I also want to tell you that it's really something that we're going to try to do to get you a history. In order to have a history mean anything to you, you've got to know what we've done so that you can know if it was right. You can try to do it again or try to do it a different way. If it was wrong, you'll try not to go there again. But I have enjoyed all of my assignments, and I hope that by the time I get the history done, if you all give me a grade there, a report card, maybe I can get a medium or something, or just say she passed. Anyway, thank you to you all, and I love you all, and I'm so proud of this organization.
We're going to have our treasurer give the budget because he didn't give it right after his treasurer's report.
And this will be under committee reports. So we will give the mic over to Peter Pardini for the budget.
Thank you, Donna.
And you realize it was also amended, so we needed to, you know, for the technology purchase that the board authorized on Thursday.
The proposed budget for the total income for the period January 1st, 2013 to December 31st, 2013 is $194,000. The budget expenses are $302,470 plus the technology expense of roughly, was it $466? Basically, we approved the expense, some expense funds for the HostGator site that we're going to implement in 2013. So the total expenses are $302,470 plus $466 for this technology expense. Unfortunately, we do not have a balanced budget because our income and expenses are there's a difference of $108,470. Plus the amount of the technology expenditure, $466. So basically, we're projecting a deficit of a little over $109,000, unfortunately. So it really, we need to do whatever we can to increase our revenues to the organization. And one way that memberships can do that is to spread the word about the Mutt Strut.
Yep.
It's going to be a fantastic fundraiser. We've got some great opportunities. So please talk to your friends, your neighbors, your enemies, your people at work. We need to get everybody involved. And one thing that we're doing for the Mutt Strut this year, we're trying to get the running community involved because we need to branch out and reach outside our own community and get people involved to help support the Mutt Strut. And this concludes the budget report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. We do have volunteers that will be, and we have door prizes and cash, so don't leave yet. We do have volunteers outside. They're inside the doors before you would exit, who will collect your badges as you leave the room. So thank you for mentioning that. Okay, do we have any old business coming before us? Do we have any new business coming before us? Okay, Linda Perel and Robert, and don't say it like that. You need to remind me kindly because I just am getting old and don't have a good memory.
Well,
so thank you for the reminder.
Okay. He asked first, so I was just trying to be polite. Ed said I should use my big girl voice. I have two settings.
Yes.
Sultry and shrill. You wouldn't like shrill. Anyway, okay. So as the chair of the publications committee, I just want to put forward that we, after our spirited discussion on Thursday night about cassettes, in particular the audio of the Blind Californian in general, I suggested at our committee meeting on Friday afternoon that we actually conduct a survey of audio BC users. And our esteemed editor, Judy, suggested that we broaden the survey to include all BC recipients to just to check on people. How are you reading the BC? So that we could reconfigure things accordingly, depending on what the results might be.
Yes.
So we're hoping to collaborate with our friends on the TOG. This is a little bit of a surprise to Vita, but we understand that she wants to do a survey as well. So it might be a good opportunity to conduct just a wider survey of how people are staying in touch in this organization. So we want to be part of that. And the second thing I want to say is I'm thrilled to see that Kathy has teamed up with Lynn Laird to work on the historical material and the Hall of Fame. Lynn is a member of our publications committee, and so I will count on you folks to keep us in the loop as you progress with that project, and Lynn can be our liaison to your group. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you very much. And yes, the survey will be accessible to those who do not use computers and who do use computers. So everyone will be included if they choose to be. Robert.
Madam President, it's Robert Wint. I just wanted to remind everyone, I know some of you, know most of you have seen it in the connection, but the scholarship is still floating around out there, so people can apply up until May 24th. Just a reminder. And if you know anybody, don't assume they know it. Let them know. Thank you.
Vita?
Hello. Since this.
Hold
since
on one moment, please. Someone is doing something with their cell phone in this room, and I would appreciate it if you'd either step out because I realize that folks are, you know, needing to get ready to leave and so on and so forth. But if I could hear it up here, it's pretty loud. Vita, thank you.
Yes. Our poor membership will be filling out more than one survey. The technical operations group is putting together a survey to ask the membership what they would like to see on their website. We're in the process of making a number of changes and trying to bring our website up to date, and we need your input. It's really, really important. It really is your website. So we will be putting a survey to ask what you'd like to see in a member section, blogs and all those types of things. And I realize not everyone uses computers. So this survey, we're going to put it out on email. We will have it online. You will have a phone number you can call to give your answers to someone. We will put it in the California Connection. You will see it everywhere. You might get tired of it, actually, but you will see it. So please take the time to complete it. It is, I believe it's the first time we've done this, right? So thanks.
Thank you. Gigi DeMarie, yes. Thank you.
As part of the Muntstrut Committee for the San Francisco region, I am part of the, I represent the Redwood Empire chapter, which is in Santa Rosa. And the San Francisco region was attempting to address the problem of the outlying areas feeling disenfranchised or disconnected from some activities in the Muntstrut in particular. So the Redwood Empire chapter has elected to have a kickoff picnic. It'll be held August 10th. It's named the Happy Dog Days of Summer. And we held an informal meeting with a lot of the people that we could identify from the outlying areas. And what I am asking and requesting is anybody that is north of the Golden Gate Bridge, all the way up to the border, and from Napa and Vallejo forward, to please contact me, Gigi DeMarie at Pay It Forward with Joy, the contacts and everything are on the net. But please contact us so we can envelop you and give you lots of details and excitement. We have two things going. One, we're asking for sponsors. We think we have it covered for the printing and the setting up and that type. Every other dime will go to the Mutt Strut, and we really want to make this successful and hold it up as a model to other areas that can do this for next year.
Thank you. I love the dog days of summer. That is wonderful. Happy dog days of summer. Yes. Does anyone else wish to seek the floor? Let's do some door prizes. All right. Let's do a $25 cash prize from CCCLV and a can of macadamia nuts. Which kind? Those are the garlic ones. Oh, gosh, I should have kept those. I'm sorry. Okay. Joe Xavier. Ken Metz. Steve Mendelson. Amanda McClure. Trudy Rose. Sylvia Reese. Gina Hanlon. Brandy Bryant. Marty Coleman. Lorene Thevney. Yay! Lorene! And she's one of our first timers. Wow! Okay. We have my last box of the cookies from the Honolulu Cookie Company. They're so good. And let's see who gets that one. Connie Bateman. Gene McCoy? Gina McCoy. Lynn Laird. Shel Klein. Bonnie Rennie. Jane Cardis. Joseph Lopez. Debbie Flowers. Becky Barnes. Armando Maldonado. Peter Pardini! Woo! Now, our last door prize to close out the spring 2013 conference and convention is an anonymous $25 cash prize. Andrietta Welsh? Henrietta Welsh. Don Brown. Joanne Smith. Joanne LeCompte. Angie Wacob, Terry Coney, Victor Clifford, Michael Richardson, Linda Johnson, Kimberly Knapp, Troy Tinsley, Kevin Berkery, Elena Thomason, Mike Marlin, John Wentworth, Linda Amate, Susan Glass. Georgette Tenace. Jane York. Linda C. O'Neill. Woo! All right. Congratulations and thank you, everyone, for a wonderful convention. Do we have a motion to adjourn? Do we have a second? All those in favor. Aye. Thank you. See you in the fall.